The Apollo program sent six of seven missions that went to the moon to land, did land. It was a very exciting time. From the Apollo program came 30,000 spin-offs of what we did. 12,000 of those were medical. I could talk about those for two or three days. And they set up these lunar science stations on the moon. We had a seismic net, a magnetometer net, and a laser ranging retroreflector net, and they're still using that net to tell how far the plates are moving on Earth with respect to each other. So it was a great mission. But after long before the Apollo program was over, the budget started to drop like a big safe. And even so, we did this mission right here where we flew the Skylab program. Y'all are familiar with Skylab, I'm sure. I think there's some pieces still in Western Australia. And whoever knows where they are should hang on to them, because one of these days they'd be worth a lot of money. That was a great mission. We put people up in space for 84 days. If you go fast to Mars, we showed that people could live and people will be able to get out and do something besides sit around on Mars when they get there. So that was a great mission. And then we were working on this other vehicle while we were working on Skylab. There it is right there, the space shuttle. And in the back are three blue diamonds. They're from the very high technology engines in there. A space shuttle is an especially incredible piece of machinery because it is so high tech in terms of its engine technology. It has a high pressure turbine in it that's about this big, a little bigger than a Volkswagen engine, but it puts out 65,000 horsepower. If you had that kind of engine in your Volkswagen and gave it too much gas, you could end up on Mars, too. It's a horsepower to weight ratio is in phenomenal. If you had a 300 horsepower automobile engine that had the same horsepower to weight ratio, your automobile engine would weigh 3 pounds. So we're very nervous about flying this machine into orbit. Now, but it is a totally different machine than the Saturn V. The Saturn V, when it took off, it vibrated so bad that you couldn't tell if your knees were shaking or not. And this machine right here, it doesn't vibrate near as bad. I could tell right away my knees were shaking. It takes about 8 minutes and 30 seconds to get into orbit. At 54 kilometers high and 54 kilometers downrange, the solid rocket motors separate. They powered into orbit pretty much to about Mach number 6.5. And then they're kicked off and they're parachuted back in the ocean where they're refilled and reused. I told them, I said, well, I'm never going to fly any reused solid rocket motors. And it's one of these firsts that I don't have in my biography, but sure enough, on the very next mission, all my solid rocket motors were filled up and reused. The one thing I never told them I'd never do, I got to do anyhow. But it works sometimes. I just wanted to show you this picture because I figured 25 years after we landed on the moon, there'd be restaurants in space. The food isn't much that Captain Crippen is opening right there to eat, but the view, I'm telling you, the atmosphere is really tremendous. And one of these days, there will be restaurants in space where you have a view like that. That clouds and that water, phenomenal. This is another thing you can see from space that people on Earth don't get to see all that often. When you fly around the Earth, you're flying around there for an hour and a half at a time, and every 45 minutes you see a sunrise, and every 45 minutes you get to see a sunset. They're all different, and they're all just as beautiful as they can be. The human eye can see about 22 layers of aerosols in those sunrises and sunsets. We've learned a lot of things from flying in space. And of course, Australia was right in the middle of the first shuttle missions and future missions beyond. We had a UHF transmission station at Yargadee, and we're talking to Aurora Valley sometimes. But you can see doing the deorbit burn, but just off the Indian Ocean, and we passed right by Yargadee, and then we ended up over the middle of the Atlantic at 400,000 feet in the air, and another 2,500 miles out, And people were wondering if we were going to end up back on the ground. I confess I was wondering that too, and we did. Somehow. This thing weighs about 100 metric tons. It's a big piece of machinery. It comes down, lands on lake bed, and goes very fast. Unfortunately, we found out when we started flying it that you wouldn't be able to use the engines when you came back in for landing. And I wish they'd told us about that before. Anyway, that's what happened in it. And if you practice a lot, you can make it every time, and we got some good people doing that. I think everybody can be very proud of the kind of headlines that we were able to get, because we hadn't been flying in space for 5 or 6 years, and back in the States, they put headlines in the paper like this, and that was amazing to me. We also using a space shuttle to deliver upgraded satellites to aid communications. Communications from space, I believe, has totally changed the way the world views itself and views each other. I think the communications from space and other places had a lot to do with bringing down the Berlin Wall and changing the whole face of Europe here over the last several years. But this is a new thing in communications. It uses Ka band, which is a broader bandwidth. We think before it's over with, people will be getting televisions from space to satellite dishes that are a little bigger than a dinner plate. We think also it'll be used to parallel process supercomputers, so that a supercomputer one place can talk to a supercomputer in another place and make a lot of contributions in fast ways of doing things, and 70 other things that people have thought to do with improved communications. This is the first space lab mission, and the last mission I got to fly on is a very exciting mission. I did 70 experiments. You can tell that's zero gravity right there. There's Owen Garrett sitting there, and he's not sitting on anything at all. In the background is Byron Lichtenberg, and he's working on a fluid physics module. That fluid physics module was made by the Fiat engine folks, and it's hard to work on as a Fiat engine too. The most important thing that we did on that mission, I found out after inquiring for 6 months, scientists don't like to talk to pilots much. I found out after 6 months that it was growing a protein crystal. It was 1,000 times larger than the best protein crystal we could grow on Earth of the same kind. We find that more ordered crystals, proteins, can grow in space. And when they're more ordered, their properties are better deciphered when you bring them back to Earth. By doing that, we think we'll be able to go to do what we call rational drug design, which is eliminate years and years of sort of tedious drug processing. We have looked at proteins that are as varied as those that can fight cancer, help prevent heart transplant rejects, fight plant diseases, and even those associated with the AIDS virus. This is the Upper Atmospheric Research Satellite that's monitoring the ozone layer up there right now. The reason I show you this is because they discovered giant winds that start over Australia and go clean to the Atlantic Ocean. And I thought the Australians would be happy to hear that. And they occur in the mesosphere. Nobody knows what's happening in the mesosphere. In fact, we know so little about it, we call it the ignorosphere. This is a Galileo probe. It's going to Jupiter right now. It'll dip down, and I'm sure the tracking networks at Tidbinbilla will be reporting all the data back from this probes that are taking pictures of the satellites around Jupiter, enable us to get all the data back. They were going to shoot a probe down the atmosphere of Jupiter. It's going to go at 115,000 miles an hour and have more than 400 Gs. I told them they'd have to get the G-forces down some if they wanted me to ride it. This is the Ulysses probe, which only the Deep Space Network at Tidbinbilla can record. It's flying over the south pole of the sun right now, and it's starting in a very important mission to find out what's happening down there. We already know that the solar wind comes out of that part of the world, thanks to Ulysses, about twice as fast as it moves in other directions. I think we're going to find out something we never thought about before when Ulysses goes down there, and I think the people at Tidbinbilla will be direct contributors to that effort, because they'll be the ones that are tracking that rascal. and getting the data back from it. We've used people to fix satellites in orbit. This shows one of our fellows releasing a satellite that weighs about 3,500 kilograms. Now, I only show you this because I hope that nobody tries to try this in their backyard, because it'll hurt your body. We've had three people there fixing the satellite into orbit, the Intelsat 6, repairing a communication satellite, fix that rascal, and they did a good job of it. There's a repair that's going on a space telescope. They did fix, of the 17 things that were wrong with space telescope, they fixed all 17 of them, and another five besides that they found. But I only show you this picture because it's up above 600 kilometers, and down there in the lower right-hand corner is 80 Mile Beach. And if your eyes are as bad as mine, which one is the one where the space telescope is fixed? That's what I thought. It's that one over there. Yeah. They really did a good job of it, because it sure had blurred vision before. It was supposed to do 28th magnitude stars. On the last time I talked to folks, in a 30-minute exposure, they were getting 27.5 magnitude stars. So I think we beat spec. Space telescope will resolve a 6-foot-tall person at 3,000 miles. This is the space radar lab. We're going to fly another one here in August that will fly right over Australia. We're going to try what we call interferometry using global positioning system, and that will allow us, we think, to get the surface of Australia down to centimeters from 300 kilometers from space. And if we do that, it will totally revolutionize our search for things like mineral resources in Australia, ensuring that we know what the health of crops are in Australia, and learning about the health of trees and plants and everything else. It's going to revolutionize engineering and agriculture. You wait. We use pictures from space that are absolutely beautiful. This picture can be used. This is a Kennedy Space Center picture. It has a resolution of about 10 meters. It can be used to make instant maps. It just saves years and years of time and work and ground truth. And those things are going to be happening all over the world with the new cameras that we have taken to orbit. Here's a beautiful picture right here. See that arrowhead-shaped lake up there? That's Lake George. And if you knew what you were looking at, you could see, I wish I had a pointer. I could show you where the bridge is going across to the Capital Territory there. And after we finished doing that stuff in space, what we plan to do in the future is to work with the Russians. We plan 10 docking missions with the Mir. This shows a shuttle dock to the Mir right now, and we plan to work with them. That'll work pretty good, I think. It's going to be very exciting. Back in 1987, we were going to build a space station that looked like this. Now we're going to build a space station that looks like this. In the foreground, those two modules on there, the Columbus module built by the European Space Agency, the Japanese experiment module. Just behind that is the Habitat module built by the Americans. The solar arrays are built by the Americans. Those round things out on the end are Solar Dynamics, built by the Americans and the Russians. The Russians have that power tower up there, and back in the back are solar tugs and a service module, all built by the Russians. We're now working with the Russians, the European Space Agency, the Japanese, the Canadians, and of course the Australians will be providing communication support all the time. And we think this is going to be very important. We have, doing this work will be the combined industrial, scientific, and technical resources of over 900 million human beings. We should be able to make real progress in space exploration. In a space station, I believe we'll be looking at the effect of life sciences on human beings for long-duration space flight. One of the doctors told me one time that for long-duration space flight, your heart deconditions, your bones lose calcium, and your muscles atrophy. And he says, you know what that is? I said, no, what? He says, it's just like getting old. I said, "You mean you think the space station is going to keep people from getting old?" He says, "We're going to try." Well, that's something. That's certainly a goal worthwhile doing. As I look out at this audience, I see a bunch of folks out there who think getting old is for the bird. The old folks, that is. And man, curing that would really be a great thing. We're also going to use it for materials resources, materials and protein crystal growth. It's going to be a great thing. This is a beautiful picture right here. It was only made 4 months ago. This is a picture done by the Clementine satellite that mapped the whole moon in 2 months' time. That really dark right crater up there is the north pole of the moon. They've done tests, and they think maybe there's water on the moon. I hope so. One of these days, I believe we'll be going back to the moon. The moon looks like this from the backside. This was taken by the Galileo probe that went around the moon. There are a lot of bright red craters up there that shows that the moon is a very interesting, exciting place. That crater right in the middle is Mare Orientale. It's 800 kilometers across. The reason I like to show you this picture, though, is that big black crater down there in the right there. It's 2,200 kilometers across, and until this picture was made, although people had theorized about the moon having that crater, nobody had ever seen it before. So here's something that's 2,200 kilometers across, about as far as from here as to Alice Springs, and nobody ever knew anything about it. So much for that theory that we know everything there was to know about the moon. The Clementine people measured the depth of the crater, that crater right there. It has walls that are 12 kilometers deep. That's about twice as deep as any satellite or planet in our solar system has. And here it is right next door, 2.5 days away. So one of these days, I figure we'll all be going back to the moon to learn a lot more. This is a picture of what it looked like, maybe that moon base. This is done for my old friend Bob McCall, the National Commission on Space. He's a great guy. It's these kind of pictures that get interest and started again in exploring the moon. That thing in the foreground is a rail gun. You see those people flying around with backpacks and driving three-wheel motorcycles. And they sort of look like they're having fun. I don't guess they're government workers. This is another reason to go back to the moon. I told you space telescope could resolve a 6-foot-tall person at 3,000 miles. This is nothing what these telescopes can do. Around the stars that are 10 to 30 light years from Earth, it can see the planets around those stars, and in fact could be able to resolve the continents on those planets around the stars. That's the kind of learning we need to do to make the future go our way. One of these days we'll end up on Mars. We're already starting to work a little bit on that. We've done things like improve that thing that's on that fellow's wrist right there. That's an electronic cuff checklist. We think cuff checklists will be very useful for people even working in local areas where they are out in the fields or not. It'll help them do tedious work correctly. And the whole pressure suit will be operated by that. There are many, many reasons to explore. The main reason we need to explore, as far as I'm concerned, is to gain new knowledge. And by gaining that new knowledge and challenging our very young and talented creative men and women, scientists and engineers around this planet, we'll be able to make real progress. Progress that will help us both explore space and improve life on Earth. We proved we could do that in the Apollo program. We need to keep on doing it so that life on Earth will be better for all of us. The other reason to explore is something that I believe everybody in this audience once was, and several people in this audience are right now, and surely everybody in this audience is going to have one of these days. And here are the reasons. The reason to explore are grandbabies. I really sincerely believe these just happen to be a couple of my grandbabies, and I'm sure everybody else has a couple of theirs. But back up there in the corner are the launch pads at Kennedy Space Center. Those launch pads are going to be very significant devices in making their lives more challenging, more rewarding, and more satisfying in the future. And I sincerely believe that when you can do everything you can to make the lives of your children and your grandchildren better, that really is what the world is all about. And I'm glad to have taken part in that process. And I think everybody in Australia can be very glad of their support of space exploration, which has contributed to making these grandkids do so well. Thanks for listening.